Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Pearlman. My guest is artist, painter, and musician William Benson. Benson is a fine arts graduate of Cornell University. His work has been shown at the Rochester Memorial Art Museum, the Arnott Museum in Corning, New York, the Johnson Museum of Art at Cornell University, as well as dozens of galleries throughout New York State. In addition to landscapes, abstracts, and murals, he is also a renowned portrait painter. He has done portraits of many acclaimed professors, CEOs, physicians, and judges. Benson is also a local bass player who has played with various bands throughout the region. He has several representatives of his work, including Portraits, Inc. in New York City. And welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tish. Nice to be here.
Now, you've been drawing since you were two, according to what I've read. Do you remember what the urge was to start creating with paper and pen and ink and so on?
I mean, if you're asking me if there was some sort of time when I was inspired by something at the age of two, three, or four, I don't remember it. Although the story that my parents tell me is that I had drawn a dragon in crayon on my bedroom wall when I was four, which didn't really please them that much, although they noticed that I had some inspiration to do that, and they don't know where it came from. I don't know what book I had been read or how that came about. But that is the first time that my parents told me that there was some artistic drive.
Yeah, that's amazing. And, you know, it always feels like kids are trying to make sense of themselves in the world, and maybe you were using art.
That might be true. I was born a twin. My twin brother passed away in 84. And he was a wonderful musician as well, but I found my inspiration through the visual arts, even though we played in a band together.
Wow.
Another childhood memory, if I can, is we were separated to take us to nursery school because the nursery school teacher was a very good friend of my mother's, and we were tough to handle together, so we went separately. And the first time I went, I didn't want to leave the home, and I was kicking and screaming, and when she got me into the nursery school, she set me down at the table and just put some crayons in front of me, and I started drawing. I mean, she realized that was a good way to keep me occupied and quiet. And then she brought me home, and this is what my mother tells me. She said that she showed these drawings to my mother, and they're nursery school drawings. And so she goes, "Yeah, what?" And this woman, Mimi, a really dear friend of my mother, said, no, these are different. These are different, better than most of what I've seen. So just to let you know.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So, So did your mother then encourage you with that prompt from the teacher? Do you know?
One would hope.
I mean, through the years, you must have.
No, you know, I was always the best painter and drawer in grade school and elementary school and then high school. And then I got to fine arts at Cornell, and there were people just as talented as I was. But they didn't want me to be in the fine arts school. They wanted me to have a different career in business, the way my father had become a businessman.
Every artist I talk to says that the family did not encourage anybody going into the arts.
It's
for
true.
Good reason in many ways.
They're looking out for my well-being.
That's
in some
right.
way.
That's right. Now you've said that early on you were intrigued by what's underneath beautiful paintings. To tell us how that has evolved and actually affected your own work.
Every time I've studied art, and that started pretty much in elementary school on my own, you see these gorgeous paintings, and I wondered, how did they get there? What did they start with? I mean, what was the first part of the painting or the drawing? And so whenever I saw an unfinished piece from a famous artist, something that they had left and not finished, or they had died and they were unfinished pieces, I studied the grounds that they used to paint on. A lot of them used white chalk to sketch out the image, let's say, of a portrait. And then there was the unfinished portrait. One in particular is by Stuart of George Washington. And I saw the first layers of thin paint to sketch it out, and then how he filled in parts of the face with certain colors of skin tone. And I think only the eyes were actually fully realized, but I loved seeing the process.
That's interesting, like a mechanic looking at the scaffolding, you know?
Yes,
I mean,
exactly.
That was my image I got when I saw that you were really into that. You know, I lived in Amsterdam for a while, and I was so intrigued by the Rembrandt house and his sketches. Dim little lights so that they don't get ruined by the light. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe that process,
mm-hmm.
how important drawing is.
Well, Rembrandt,
there's a different class, I know.
You can't say enough about that, man.
I know. Now, you also talk about the fact that there's geometry in your work. Tell us about that. Math is a mystery to me. Art is something that touches me deeply, but math is beyond me. Tell us how that
works.
You know, I am no mathematician myself. I did all right in math, but I did really well in geometry because it's mostly drawing, right? It's shapes, trapezoids and squares and angles and circles. And I just loved that aspect of being able to work with my hands and math at the same time. Now, I kind of forgot about all that as I got later on into painting. But then I realized that, and most great painters talk about this throughout history, the essence of a great painting is primarily design. If you have the design right at the beginning, then you can progress into its final portions. But I don't care how beautifully rendered certain things are in a painting that has a poor design, it will not hold up. So I began reading books about composition and design, and one thing that comes up through the Renaissance is, well, the golden rectangle, or the golden ratio, which is 1.618. So I said, well, if the Greeks thought this was the most beautiful rectangle ever, then maybe there's something to it. And I began playing around with it. And if you want to talk about one painting I have at the exhibit at College Town Bagels right now, it is based on the golden mean, the golden rule, and the golden rectangle. And that is a painting called Steep Grade, which is a horizontal piece. So the rectangle has been put on its side. And the thing about the golden rectangle is if you take a square out of it, what's left is another golden rectangle. And if you take a square out of that, another golden rectangle, and so on and so forth. And that creates this minimizing spiral, which mimics or is exactly the same as the spiral of the nautilus shell and sunflower seeds.
I have heard this spoken about,
So I took that and I turned it on its side and I took out the square. Now, it's not that visible, but I have shown a very fine line. And then there is a square of trees next to this road that leads to a hill, as it does in Ithaca. It's actually taken right out of a scene in Bostwick Hill Road. And then I have a sign, which is a diamond shape on the right, which shows the truck going downhill. It's a steep grade part. But all of it has underneath some aspect of circles, spheres, rectangles, angles, and diagonals that sort of push and pull the viewer in and out of the
place. And now that you've talked about this, would people see that? Because you say, in addition to you wanting to see the process from great art, you want people to see your process. And so how is that rendered? I mean, you're verbally telling us what you did, but how does someone visually looking at it see that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Most people that look at these pieces, they see the abstraction and they see the representationalism, and they think the abstraction was put on top. I would do this beautiful, my mother would say, why are you ruining your beautiful landscapes? I said, no, I think I'm enhancing them. Well, the abstraction comes first. Because in the process, the underlying layer is the design. So I'm working out the geometry of the design before I start painting the representational image. And when I paint with these thin washes, I use different mediums, and I'm very loose with my paint and wide brush, and spatters and drips happen haphazardly, and I push and pull different, mostly tinted colors, the colors that are transparent, alizarin crimson, dioxazine purple, ultramarine blue. I can push and pull those around, and they still show some of the surface of the canvas through it, and they have the ability to be thin as a dye. It's not opaque. And once I get that settled, and I have a feeling I understand the design of the painting, then I go ahead, and then I put the representational image that I have really meant to do on top of that.
So does this sound right that the first rendering is almost like looking through a window with water dripping down it?
Yeah, almost like that, right? With the movement of splashes and wipes with the brush are
and just shadows.
Almost haphazard, but they are in essence only there to supplant or to support the design I do have in mind to paint, which is Steep Grade, Bostwick Hill.
Well, when you do landscapes, are you doing them from real life? Or are you looking at photographs or just memory?
I do plein air work. Not a lot, not as much as I'd like to. But driving around, I have my camera, and I see something, and I take lots of pictures. And then, I mean, it never really looks like any of the photographs because I'm pushing and pulling what I see to fit my geometry and fit my design.
Yeah,
but I title my work, well, Green Street is one, Bostwick Hill Road, Steep Grade, and there's another one called Route 20 going to Casanova, and these are all recognizable.
Well, see, that's what art's about, though. You know, it's supposed to be you know, filtered through your emotions.
Absolutely.
And your experience and your mood at
yes.
the moment that and your how old you are and how much experience you have.
Exactly.
You know,
yes. yeah.
so of course people might recognize it, but they might not.
They might not. That's right.
Which is what I love about art. Now, I understand making fine art and looking at beautiful things and trying to share them with people via your craft. How did you get into portraiture, though? It's an entirely different version of art to me.
Well, it's painting.
It's painting.
You know, other painters say to me, you know, you're doing portraits, which is a commercial venture. Yes,
yeah,
it is.
Uh-huh.
I said, but I'm painting. You know, I'm pushing paint around, and I'm bringing to each portrait my own sensibility. As much as I need to make the subject look good, I mean, that's my job. I'm moved by some of the great portrait painters of the, you know, we were talking about Rembrandt earlier, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Velasquez and Degas,
Sargent,
John Singer Sargent.
Yeah,
you know,
Sargent stuff
I just
is amazing.
Love that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, it came about because back in the late 70s, early 80s, I'd just been married, and I was an illustrator for the Grapevine magazine back here, long ago. So I was doing illustration work all over town. And I saw portraits that were produced by some of the portrait companies that I didn't think were very good. And I had a feeling that the art of portraiture was being lost because it's not being taught at any college,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
And I said to my wife, I said, I think I can do this because there's money here. I needed to make a living.
Of course,
so
yeah.
I started doing some portraits, you know, my friends, my wife, my kids, and trying to build up a portfolio. I submitted it after about 6 years of producing work to Portraits Incorporated, and they were one of the prestigious houses. They still are one of the most prestigious portrait houses in the country, and they accepted me in 1990. So I was thrilled, and from there I got into the others.
Well, let's dig into how you actually approach this. I've often wondered, do you use photographs? Do you get to know the subject? How do you do a portrait that's going to last for hundreds of years for a family of someone that you don't even know?
Well, I want to spend as much time with those people as possible. Let's just take an instance. I finished the portrait of Dr. Rob McKenzie for the QU Medical Center. Dee Dee Hatch is the official photographer for the QU Medical Center. And she goes, Bill, a good friend of mine, she goes, Bill, I've got, you know, hundreds of photographs of Dr. McKenzie. I said, well, I'll look at them, which I did, just to familiarize myself with him. But when I finally met Rob, I said, let's just hang out. I want to see how you hold yourself. I don't want to put you in a pose. I want to
yeah.
see how comfortable you can become in your own skin dealing with me. And I found that there were certain ways that he sat at a desk which were very, very comfortable for him. And I'd seen it in some of Dee Dee's photographs. And many times I'll have a sketchbook there and I said, I want to sketch this pose for you. So I would do that. Now, because of digital, it has changed.
Yeah.
I used to sketch when I had film because I couldn't show him anything. So I would always sketch the composition that I saw. Now I photograph it and I can show. I said, this is what I can show you exactly what
I see.
But
you do start with a drawing.
Well, after I take these digital photographs over the sitting of, the first sitting is about 2 hours. I go home, I cull the pictures, and I draw the compositions. For his portrait, I drew three compositions and one clear head drawing. Because I wanted him to see, I don't want him to pick a picture that he likes in my photographs. I want it to be the photograph, the head that I want to paint. So I draw it up. Now, he had always been clean shaven. And the committee that hired me to do the portrait said, we want him the way the staff remembers him, clean shaven. But when I called him up to set up the sitting, he goes, you know, I have this salt and pepper goatee. And I said, okay. He goes, if I shave it, I'm going to be red for a week. So if you want it shaved, we'll have to wait a week. I said, well, I'd like to see you with it. And when I saw him, I thought he was much more distinguished looking. And it was going to be a lot of trouble for me, but I wanted to do it.
If you're just joining us, my guest is William Benson. He's a portrait artist as well as a musician. He's a man of many interests. We're talking about his ventures into portraiture. We're talking specifically about a portrait he did of the CEO of Cuga Medical Center. Do you want to elaborate on that? You know what I've been wondering, too? I've always wondered this. Do you ever see something mysterious that the person or the family has never seen in the person, and it comes out in a painting? You know, I was thinking about the portrait of Dorian Gray, of course, but but you know what I mean? Sometimes we do see something that friends and family don't notice anymore.
The biggest compliments I have ever received about portraits that I've done are hugs and tears from his wife, a wife. Or I just finished a portrait of a lovely young girl that passed away from brain cancer, Layla Dietrich. Mm. And her grandmother and grandfather came to the studio for the unveiling, and they just started crying.
Wow.
And they said that is her in spirit and form. So I'm not so sure about picking out or showing something that the close family hasn't seen.
Yeah.
You know, because they know her better than I do. But with Rob McKenzie, when I showed his wife that drawing I'd done with the beard and the types of shadows I was working with, how I wanted to sculpt his face, she goes, "Oh, that looks great." I said, "Yes, can we convince the committee that he should have this beard?" And they took it to committee and they said, "Yeah, sure, go
yeah,
ahead."
And I've seen the final portrait. Yeah, it's a gorgeous,
yeah, very happy with that
gorgeous
one.
Portrait. So how is portraiture for you as an artist? Is it a different feeling process? I mean, you obviously don't own the painting anymore and it immediately goes off somewhere and probably will never be seen again.
Well, that happens with other work too. Mm. I mean, I sell my own pieces. When I go into someone's house and said, "You know, I bought this back in 1994, and I look at it, it is like sort of a child that I produced. Oh, yes, I remember doing that. That was a lot of fun. Wow, it looks good here." You know, that kind of thing. The portrait thing is, if I'm really happy with the painting the way I was with Dr. McKenzie, I've got it from my portfolio and it's up on my website. I'm really happy that it's at the hospital. I'm ready to move on to the next one.
Yeah.
I think I've done over 300 painted portraits.
Wow.
Maybe 100 pastels and more than 200 charcoals and drawings. I mean, I've done a lot of portraits.
And I actually, you brought up something that I want to talk to you about. You have this series of cows that are done in charcoal.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about charcoal? It's a very ancient tool, obviously.
I love charcoal. You're right.
Why is it,
it's
though?
It's so primitive and direct. Do you want me to say to tell you about why cows?
Sure. Yes,
well,
I want to talk about that. They're
Holsteins,
beautiful. They're beautiful.
White and black, right?
Yes.
So there they are. They have all these, they're abstract patterns from the get-go in a rectangle. Basically.
There he goes with his geometry.
Know, so,
yes.
10, 15 years ago, I'm thinking, I could do something with these cows. They are so cool, and they're so ubiquitous around here. I live, a quarter of a mile away from a dairy farm. So I started going up there to try to sketch them. I can't do that. As soon as you pull up and you get out and you sit there at one of the electric fences, they're out there. They just start
they come
coming
at
over.
You, yeah.
They just start
yeah.
coming over. So I realized I needed to use photography, and I would pull up and take quick shots before they saw me and started moving. And then I started playing with the abstract quality that I saw in them. And charcoal, I got sticks that are, an inch thick and like 8 inches long. I mean, I just...
Like a big cigar or something.
charcoal wow. sticks. And I have charcoal powder. So if you see the cows in the show there, you'll see that I've thrown powder onto the paper. And it produces this almost a volcanic, little volcanoes and splatters all over, like you would if you threw dust. And to hold that, I have to spray it immediately.
I was going to say, how do you do that?
Up,
yeah.
It's going to fall off, so it gets sprayed. And one of the big cow drawings down there is charcoal was thrown, after I'd drawn the cow, charcoal was thrown at the bottom of it and with a sprayed, and then with a very sharp plastic eraser, I pulled out all the grass and weeds. And then there's a tree behind him, and I threw charcoal behind the cow, and the splattering just looked like trees and branches and leaves. I said, "There, boom, done." That
yeah,
was great.
They are beautiful. I've only seen the digital version. I'm going to go down and see the show before it leaves. Are you going to do any more series in charcoal? Are you going to continue with this idea?
I probably will continue with the cows. Right now, I just finished... I'm a sailor, too. I just finished restoring a 36-foot wooden sloop.
I was going to bring that up.
It took me 8 years, but
wow.
it's beauty, and we've been sailing it, I'd say 30 or 40 times already this season, and a gallery in Casanova asked me to do a marine art show. You know why? Because I had a regular landscape show last year, and to advertise it in the paper, they pulled an image off my website. Okay, well, it was a commission I had for a B&B in Annapolis of two schooners racing.
Wow.
A week before the show, the director calls me up. She goes, "Do you have that?" I said, no, I don't have that. She goes, "Do you have any sailing paintings?" I said, "No." And I go up there and I see in the newspaper, come see William Benson's art, and there is two schooners racing, and I didn't have the show. Well, you didn't have it in the show.
Oh my God! Well, you must love the water, though. How did you learn how to restore an old schooner?
Well, my dad was a nautical engineer when he was. Now, see, this is really
this is all part of art, though.
Yeah, he wanted to design sailboats. And he was really good at it. I have design drawings of sailboats in my house that are better than computer.
Wow.
They're exquisite, the ones he did at MIT. And his father talked him out of it.
He said, you
should go into business like I do. And he went to the Harvard Business School. And I said to my dad towards the end of his life, I said, you know, you did make life very comfortable for the family, but if you'd been a boat designer, that would have been much cooler. He said, yeah, you're probably right.
So you're sort of following in his footsteps
and
taking up where
I was four, and he was always working on whatever wooden boat we had there, and I kind of picked that
you
up.
You learn by osmosis.
It sounds
like you're good with any kind of art form.
I'm not that good at watercolor.
Really? Well,